This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
I use the word recovery. I know we don't deal necessarily with full recovery from alcoholism, but, you know, making those positive behaviour changes is to share your story, is to reach out. But you need to do that in a safe space. So actually, OTI and other communities like that provide a safe space, you know, where people go, actually, I drank two bottles as well. And you're going, thank the Lord. Not because they drink two bottles of wine, but because there's someone else like you.
This week's guest on Over the Influence, Sarah Chamberlain from Brighton. Now, if you are listening to this thinking, I have heard that voice before, she sounds familiar. Indeed, she is a friend of Over the Influence. Both myself and Ben actually trained with Sarah when we did our coach training, which feels a lifetime ago now. If you want to hear more of Sarah's story, go back and listen. Don't know exactly when. Maybe a year or two ago when she was first on the podcast, because this week's episode, we focus completely on the topic of shame and the shame that comes as a drinker, the reasons people drink upon shame, and actually the shame that you can feel when you stop drinking and those emotions are laid bare. And as we say so very often, you've got to feel all the feels. It's a fantastic episode. We've got loads to talk about. Let's get into it.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Helen, and I'm 10 years alcohol-free this year. I joined Over the Influence 4 years after I'd stopped drinking, and I expected it was going to be a place where I could talk anonymously about my shameful secret. But what I actually got transformed me and really surprised me. I spent hours talking to like-minded people all over the world on Zooms about our wins and our struggles, and realised being alcohol-free was something to be proud of, not be ashamed of. Now I'm happy to talk to anyone I know about how I'm gloriously alcohol-free and how much I gained by giving up one thing. If you have a voice in your head wondering if you should rethink your relationship with alcohol, then you probably should, and Over the Influence is an excellent place to start. I wish I'd had Over the Influence when I first stopped drinking, but I'm so grateful. It's a big part of my life now, which I wouldn't be without.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. It's brilliant to have you listening. Maybe the sun is shining where you are, because at the time of recording, April Fool's Day, it's beautiful. Got shorts on, got a t-shirt on, the sun is shining. Completely irrelevant to the podcast, but I just wanted to share that with you. My name is Sharon Hartley. I'm based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I got a notification today on my I Am Sober app. I don't really check it anymore. 2,400 days alcohol free. Woohoo! Which means coming up for year seven. 7 years in September. Absolutely, completely and utterly ridiculous, but hands down, I think one of the best things I have ever, ever, ever done. I drank far too much, far too often, and far too quickly. Took a break from booze, and yet here we are, 2,400 days later, blethering on about alcohol-free life. It's dead good. And we're going to get into a lot of it with our guest today. I don't do it on my own. Ben Anderson. Oh, sorry. We were chatting just before we recorded, and Ben was telling our guest, Sharon, are your levels all right? Sharon, are we recording? Sharon, she's got a big gob. Sharon Hartley has got a big gob. Ben Anderson.
Okay.
It's outrageous.
Well, you have. Come on. Right. Anyway.
Like, I mean, I can't deny it, can I? And that's it. End of sentence.
I'm Ben. I'm 36. I live in Liverpool. I'm husband to Jem. I'm stepdad to Alfie and Millie. I am dad to baby Leo, who's now 2.5. Can you believe that?
Oh, baby Leo.
I know. And I hate April Fool's Day. We're recording on April Fool's Day. I hate April Fool's Day. We talk about this a little bit on our premium podcast today, because I was looking at some of the alcohol brand April Fools from time gone by. One of them was a wine brand that pretended that it had lickable bottles so you could try the wine before you bought the wine. And I also thought one of them was particularly outdated because about 10 years ago, an alcohol brand that will remain nameless went, hey, we're releasing an alcohol-free version of our brand. Only joking, April Fools. Well, Lol. It's now the fastest growing market in anyway. I didn't mean to give up alcohol either, like Shaz. I said 3 months, I have a 3 month break, got to three, extended it to six, extended six to 12, and on day 366 went, yeah, this is a good choice for me, I am now an alcohol free person forever, and I've never looked back. And obviously through it we become great friends with my mate Shazza, met some fabulous people like our brilliant
you're
guest
creeping.
Sarah today.
You're creeping, right, you're crawling,
sorry,
you're crawling
you,
now.
Back to you.
You said he had a big gob and now you're trying to be nice. I mean, where do you want me to go with this?
I want you to just introduce Sarah so that we can talk to her.
That will do that. Yeah. We'll take our argument off air. Yeah. We'll deal with this
That'll
later.
Be better.
5 years this summer, Ben. 5 years this summer. Mm. Time was absolutely fine. Yes. It's brilliant. I do quite like you. Right, let's get into this week's episode with our fabulous guest. She's been on the podcast before. She is called Sarah Chamberlain, based in Brighton. Sarah, I was going to give you a big intro as to who you are and what you do, but you can do that far better than me. So first of all, thank you for coming back on the podcast. It's absolutely marvellous to have you here.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'm very honoured to be back. Although as it is April Fool's Day, I hope, you know, this isn't just a joke.
Well, we'll see how the episode goes.
I just hate it so much. I just hate just the whole thing. I just hate it. And I don't know why it winds me up so much. Because actually, since going alcohol-free, Sarah, my patience is really increased. Not around April Fool's Day
not
at
today,
all.
It's not today, it's
not.
Not
at all. I'm so glad when 12 o'clock rolls around and people stop talking about it.
It's just a trigger. It's obviously a trigger for you there, Ben. Something, you know,
really
you need to do
is.
Some therapy with that, I think.
Probably. But back to you. Who are you? What's your name and where'd you come from?
So my name is Sarah Chamberlain, as she has said, and I am an ex-teacher, really. That's kind of my background. And I left teaching quite a few years ago now to follow my passions, which were around like personal development and positive psychology and coaching. Bit of a long story. Ended up writing a few coaching courses and training a few coaches, hence knowing yourselves. And
hello, we were your pupils.
You were.
Hi, Miss.
This is great.
Hi, Miss.
Were we grade A? Give us a 5-star.
I mean, obviously, no April Fools. Grade A,
yeah,
all
you.
The way
thank
through.
You.
Thanks, Miss.
You're very welcome. Good job I didn't have to tell your mum. So since then, as well as coaching and working in the alcohol-free space, I've developed my my main passion, which is around the subject of shame. It's a very long story as to why that's my passion. But I studied it, as part of my master's in coaching and positive psychology. And since then, have been sort of spreading the word about this rather difficult subject of shame and how it impacts us and how we don't talk about it enough, but how super important it is to grapple with it, really, to recognize our own shame, because in doing so we can do something about it. And that's the key bit, the nice bit. So I like to think I help people become much more resilient to shame, and in particular young people, and also very much so within the alcohol-free space, because as we know, and I've come into your community before, shame is one of those tricky emotions that plays a pretty key role in why we drink and can even sort of hinder us stopping drinking as well. So was that a snappy enough intro? Didn't feel very snappy.
Compared to myself and Ben, our intros go on for days, so yours wasn't so bad actually. Sarah, it wasn't too bad at all. Can we come back to what you said there about, you said that the reason you're passionate in this, it's really long-winded. We've got ages on this podcast. Can we just ask you a bit about that and why you are so passionate about shame?
Yeah, of course you can. So I think it's something that my story is one that I'm sure everyone will recognise. And on some of the courses that I do, I go into a lot of detail about it. But I feel as though our upbringings, in the good old 70s and 80s, were a little sort of prone to shame, shall we say. lots of sort of comparison and I don't know. I mean, I suppose parenting practices weren't quite what they should be. And we grow up in a world where we can feel quite inadequate. And then you're kind of brought into a world where the media portrays these particular images of how we're supposed to be and we don't live up to them and so on and so forth. So like lots of other people, I suppose I grew up with this questionable sense of self-worth, I suppose. I also came from a pretty working class background and, you know, there's a great big dollop of special shame heaped on us, I think. I was fortunate enough to go off to university, but even having kind of gone through those academic doors, there's still a sense of, well, you know, you've achieved something, but don't forget where you've come from kind of thing. And I studied the social sciences and then going into education, I guess what I saw very clearly was that young people, our children, our students, don't achieve anything or really struggle to engage with learning when they don't have a good sense of self-worth, you know. And I could see there's this big kind of emotional landscape that young people are navigating first and foremost, that sort of emotional experience, you know. And yet we're putting these huge pressures on them to learn, and we have these great expectations around them, you know. And what always sort of frustrated me was we never allowed for those emotions properly, and we never did for young people the thing that I would argue is more essential than any kind of piece of trigonometry or English literature or whatever it is, which is sort of to empower them emotionally and to help them develop their self-worth, you know, which has been so often peppered and damaged by shame-inducing experiences, which also happen in school, I hasten to add. So through that, I became aware of shame and studied it a little bit more. Very much got into the work of Brené Brown. She's my absolute heroine. And from there sort of went on to study the subject in a lot more detail. And all of this is happening alongside my own journey of self-development, a big part of which was going alcohol-free, actually, because, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in a lot more detail, but when we feel shame, we're very good at numbing. We absolutely want to numb. And what's a really good way of doing that? Drinking booze. So there's a little bit more to it, but that's a kind of windy path through to how I became a bit of a shame nerd, I think.
It's listening to you, you know, talking about the past. I was thinking about, do you remember the sidebar of shame? Do you remember that? And that was in a woman's mag, wasn't it? Where there used to be like a, yes, like photos of celebrities and they would like circle cellulite when they're on the beach with their family.
And oh, it's
like,
horrific.
Just absolutely, yeah, nuts. But then, you know, I was also thinking how relevant this is to today. You know, even this week, Prime Minister Keir Starmer, I think, was it an interview with Chris Mason from the BBC where he was talking about Adolescence, the Stephen Graham,
yeah,
Netflix drama. And he was saying, you know, he's been talking, and kids aren't talking about specific social media platforms or influencers or whatever. They're talking about self-esteem and low self-esteem. It's so relevant. I think before we get into it, can we define shame, Sarah? Because, for example, yeah, you know, like I will often say, oh, I've got no regrets. You know, everything I've ever done, I've got no regrets, but I do look back and this, I do have really shameful moments. Is shame and regret the same? How do you define shame?
Oh, brilliant question. And yes, it is very topical. Perhaps we can sort of circle back around to that at some point because it's so pertinent. But shame, there are many different definitions and you can do as I did and, you know, get utterly lost in the various academic and philosophical debates about them. But I always go back to Brené Brown's definition. And I'm not going to, I don't know, I can repeat it verbatim, but essentially what we know about shame is that it's this very powerful master emotion. It's horrible. We want to avoid it. So much so we don't even really like to talk about it. And what shame does is makes us feel unworthy, unworthy of love and belonging, like we're not good enough. So it's those feelings, and they're very much about the core of you, the person. So I think a good way of trying to understand shame is to differentiate it from guilt. Much like regret, like humiliation, there's kind of a group of emotions which are related. But I think perhaps shame and guilt are used the most interchangeably. Guilt is a similar emotion, but it's arguably a healthier emotion and it's shorter lived, because guilt is about our behaviours, whereas shame is about our very self. So if we take the example of not doing very well at school, guilt would say, in our exams, we don't do very well in our exams, guilt would say, well, I didn't revise, I didn't go to all my classes, I could have done more. It's all about the behaviour, and behaviours are completely changeable. So it sort of depersonalizes the experience and is empowering, because you can change your behaviors. Shame, on the other hand, would say you're rubbish, you're lazy, you're not good enough, you're not clever enough. So they're judgments made against the very person. And of course, that's much more damaging, because you can't change who you are. So shame is very much about the core, very much about not being good enough, and it's very painful.
And it's really interesting, because we've talked about this before, but I remember thinking that shame was a public thing. That scene in Game of Thrones, I'm not sure if you've seen Game of Thrones, but where, you know, the Queen's going through the streets and everyone's shame, 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 repeating it. But what you're talking about there, you know, shame isn't public. It's not other people's opinions weighing on you. It's you. Shame is personal.
Actually, that's a really good point. Shame is both. Shame is what we call a psychosocial cultural concept.
Blimey, I'm glad you said that, Sarah. You call it a what?
Psychosocial or psychosocio-cultural concept. So it's experienced on all those levels. So it is experienced as an emotion. It's quite physical as well, you know. So if I feel shame, the feelings, the emotions, the physicality,
I can feel it now. It rises up and you go all red and hot.
It's horrible. It's very physical. It's very somatic. You feel it actually before you think it. You know, you can have that kind of fight or flight feeling. So it is emotional. It's also social. So shame happens between two people or two groups of people or in public, you know, and that's where we bring in humiliation and we judge groups of people as being shameful or not shameful or whatever. And that's where you bring in the notion of shaming. So I can shame myself, and there is such a thing as this sort of self-stigmatization, but very often I can induce shaming other people by shaming them. And it can be quite political, it's very powerful, and it's very damaging. And then it's cultural. And what we mean by that is that any given culture will determine what is shameful and what isn't. So what's deemed to be shameful in British culture may not be shameful in another culture, and vice versa. So it is very complex and multi-layered. And you're right to bring up that scene of Game of Thrones, because that is absolutely a public social example of someone being shamed. You know, and we do it publicly. The circle of shame, Ben, that you were just referring to in the magazines, you know, absolutely horrendous. And it would be things like circle of shame. Look, it's a female celebrity who's sweated. She's got sweat marks. You know, I think we talked about this before. God forbid, you know. So, yeah.
Sarah, can we talk about what I'm sure so many people listening to this will relate to. Yeah. And I know it's a fact within our community. I mean, you've been into our community. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And it's a thread that quite often comes up on Zoom calls. And it's that private cycle of shame.
Yeah.
When you're in the midst of drinking, and actually when you're on the other side of drinking, that can continue like the most hellish spiral. Because how often do we talk about, oh, you've got to feel the feels when you've stopped drinking, you know, you've got to sit with your emotions and go through this. You know, I think back, it actually happened, it was week before last, I think, Ben, wasn't it, on the Premium podcast? Mm-hmm. And I was sharing an article that Ben's dad had sent us. Is a font of all content, is our Kevin. He's absolutely brilliant. And he sent me this article written from the perspective of a husband whose wife had stopped drinking. They had a young family, and I was reading it, and I was like, oh, God. Oh, the amount of times I've been drunk in front of the kids. Oh, my God. And I'm okay with everything now. I'm okay. Do you know what I mean? I'm coming up for 7 years sober. I'm loving alcohol-free life. Best thing I ever did. But occasionally you still get those pangs of, oh God, the shame. Shameful, that drinking. It's, like I said, it's intermittent now. It's not there a lot. It'll be something I've read, something I've seen, maybe a comment, a memory, something like that. But when we're drinking, we think, God, that was shameful. And so we drink again to hide that emotion. And then when we stop drinking, you're stripped bare. There you go. And you're left with these feelings of, wow, it really did get that bad. It was like this. And, you know, I can think of a dozen community members already that have talked about shame and how they wish they'd been there for the kids or done this or done that another way, and the regret and the guilt. But the one word, shame, shame, shame. Where do we start with that as people that are looking, you know, to change our relationship with alcohol? And for those people maybe in the really early days that are thinking, wow, this feels hard inside.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And I can almost 100% be sure that everyone listening at some point will have felt it. You know, we all feel shame, absolutely. And the relationship between shame and alcohol is a complex one. They're very interwoven, but the good news is that it can dissipate. And the great news is that communities like yours are perfect for doing it. And I'll sort of talk about the journey with shame and alcohol free. So if we think about why we start drinking, I'm not trying to simplify it. I appreciate there's a myriad of reasons, but for a lot of people, we drink because we've suffered something in the past. Now, it could be big trauma, big T, you know, awful things that have happened that we want to numb out. Won't necessarily be that. It could be the small T trauma. It could just be experiences that you've had throughout childhood. Often they are related to childhood. They're not always. Or it could be in regular adult life that you're trying to block something out. Whatever it is that's triggered that trauma and that shame, we're going to want to numb it, okay? So a really good way, like I've already said, to numb things is to drink, is to not deal with it. So you drink. So you've had this trauma, it's triggered shame, whatever the experience is, you can't bear that feeling. So it's much easier, rather than face it head on, one of the big reactions we have to shame is avoiding. So we drink. The more we drink, the more we're likely to feel ashamed of our drinking, whether that's to yourself because you know you downed 2 bottles of wine on Friday night and you fell asleep, or whether it's because you were drunk in front of your children, or whether it was because it was at the Christmas do and you told your boss to F off. Whatever it is, you know, you're going to feel that shame. Now, once again, you feel that shame, but you don't feel all the feels because it's too painful to lean into. So what do? You drink again. So the shame is getting worse. And what shame needs to survive is secrecy, silence, and judgment. You know, Brené Brown talks about this really, really eloquently. So when we know we've been drunk in front of the kids, or we drunk 2 bottles of wine on a Friday night, the last thing we're going to do is tell anyone. You know, because it's embarrassing, because we don't want to lean into it, don't want to think about it. So shame plays a big role in hindering any kind of recovery. Now, pre the lovely alcohol-free movement and online communities we had, that we have now, pre that time, it was even harder because where do you go? You know, like, you might suspect there are other people out there, but you've got no way of contacting them. And yet, if you do get contact, you do speak to somebody else about what you are going through, the shame that you're feeling and the drinking that you're doing, you're likely to sort of feel a bit better. So what we need to overcome shame, and I would strongly argue one of the biggest supporting mechanisms for going alcohol free and going into some kind of, I use the word recovery. I know we don't deal necessarily with full recovery from alcoholism, but, you know, making those positive behavior changes is to share your story, is to reach out. But you need to do that in a safe space. So actually, OTI and other communities like that provide a safe space, you know, where people go, actually, I drank two bottles as well. And you're going, thank the Lord, not because they drink two bottles of wine, but because there's someone else like you. And I've been there myself, you know, where you start, that shame starts to dissipate because you start to get the connection. You start to lose the fear. You realize that what you've been doing is similar to other people. You know, it's less isolating. So reaching out and telling your story in a safe way is a really positive way to help you on your journey. So what I would say to anyone, wherever they are in that journey, reach out to those safe spaces. There will always be somebody else who's done that. There are thousands of parents who've been embarrassed and ashamed of what they did in part, you know, for what they did when drunk in front of their kids or whatever. But what you can possibly do through sharing these stories is depersonalize it, look at it as a behavioral thing and something that you've now changed. And that's quite empowering. So reaching out, joining these communities, and then doing some of the shame work, some of the stuff that I do, can be really helpful ways of moving forward and moving, certainly once you've sort of conquered that, you know, you've been safely sober for a while, working on some of those root causes and sources of shame to develop a greater resilience to it can also be another way of keeping and maintaining sobriety or alcohol-free life.
I forgot how lovely our conversations are because it's always nice to see you, Sarah. But I did forget how confronting they can also be because, okay, I totally get it. And, you know, I have talked about things that I feel. And actually, for me, the main kind of shame around my drinking, looking back, and I have reached out and I have talked to Shaz and thousands of people around the globe about this before, is the, like, just ruining stuff, like blowing up arguments with Jem. Just because I was pissed and being a knob. Like that's where a lot of my kind of, like, when I look back, that's the first thing I think about when I think about shame and alcohol. I mean, one of the ways I think that I've dealt with it is that, and I'm interested to know if this is a healthy way or not, but I have kind of, I've created this narrative and I do believe it, that this idea that in vino veritas, in when someone has a drink, they tell the truth. I've kind of quite often and quite loudly said that's bollocks. And I think that actually, you know, it's the substance, not the person. That, like, when I was saying some of these things, I'd wake up the next day and I wouldn't relate to them. I wouldn't believe some of the things that came out of my own mouth. And I'd blame the substance. Is that okay to do that? Is that an unhealthy thing to do? Am I just kind of passing it off and trying to escape from it? Do I need to do deeper work, Sarah?
We just go and lay down on that couch and we can start talking about your childhood. No, I don't think you do. And I actually think what you're describing is reasonably healthy. I think from the point of view of looking at what you did in context and from a behavioral guilt point of view, you know, you did have a substance which physically inhibited you. So you shouldn't be, although you can accept that and be accountable for it, that's the key thing, which clearly you are, then that's reasonably healthy because you have now said, well, I can change that. What wouldn't be healthy is to continually use it as some form of self-flagellation and constantly go, well, I'm such a rubbish husband, I'm such a this, I'm such a that. That's the shame talking. So if you haven't got that voice, then you're doing okay. So in a way, it doesn't really matter what your narrative is, so long as you're seeing it for what it is, you know. So there's got to be an element of ownership around it, but you're seeing it in the context of your behavior at that time and not as something which is profoundly wrong with Ben. Do you understand the difference? So it's about sort of depersonalizing it and seeing it in context. Because what shame will do is it will personalize it. Yeah. Mm. So shame would, if shame had that real hold on you, you would be continuing to say, I am a bad person, you know, because of what I did when I'm drinking. And of course, you're not. You're not a bad person at all. You just did what people do when they're drunk, and you've since owned it and done something about it.
Are you listening, and in fact, Sharon? I'm just.
Well, yeah.
Because we had a bit of a word about this the other day, didn't we? A stern word.
What, your stern word to me?
Yeah, my stern word to you.
Yeah. I mean, oh God. There's a couple of things here. First of all, sir, I've just got to just very quickly, a quick aside. Ben, you literally dropped a bollock on the podcast. I didn't think we were swearing anymore.
Sorry, I know, I did. It just felt
so
right.
So 50p.
It felt right.
And you know what? It was appropriate at the time. Jar. So yeah. We'll let it go 25p, please, okay. into the swear jar.
Fine.
Yeah, I'm listening to this, sir, and I'm like this. And so I'll come back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier on when I was reading this newspaper article, and it just sort of like prompted some feelings, and I shared them with Ben on the premium podcast. And what did you say to me, Ben? Actually, this feels like it's turning into a coaching session, like with millions of people listening. But anyway,
We're still practicing. No clients at the moment. We're too busy, but we're still practicing, miss. Now, I said to you, Sharon, how many years have you been alcohol free?
Coming up for 7.
Yeah. I can't remember what I said next. It was good though at the time. It was.
You said something like,
how many podcast episodes have we released? How many
hundreds?
How many books have you written? And how many of those have been read around the globe? And then how many hours of conversations have you had with people about alcohol? How often the kids brought up, you know, our mom when you used to drink, you know.
But you said
the kids don't talk about it. The kids don't ever bring it up.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I thought you were saying how often do the kids get in touch with you? And I'm like, every day, three times a day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and how often?
Too often.
Kids, how often do they bring up, oh, mom, remember when you were drinking and you did this? Like, how often does that happen?
Well, it doesn't.
Sharon is, you know, every day doing fabulous things just because she's a great person. You know, lots of people see the public stuff. I get to see a lot of the private stuff that Sharon does.
Yeah,
and,
every day.
And Sharon is, you know, she's constantly, constantly helping people. But she still can't escape this. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Shaz. It's your thing.
Yeah, I still, not a lot and nowhere near like it was, have those feelings of, oh man, what a waste of time that was. You know, what a waste of time. Is it shame? Is it guilt? Is it regret? I did probably a little bit of a combination of all of the above, actually. But I will check myself and go, all right, okay, it's not like that now, which fills me then with pride and, you know, loving it and so happy that I made that decision. Six and a half years ago. We're only still in April. But Ben forever berates me. He proper bollocks me when I get a little bit, oh, but, and he's like, Sharon, just shut up. Like, literally just stop.
I think I said, how many years alcohol free do you have to be before you will let this go?
Yeah. It's, I don't know, 100? I don't know.
It's such a good question. And I really appreciate you sharing that, because I don't think you realise just how powerful it is when somebody shares their story that's honest and real. Because that's the very start of somebody else going, oh, I can, not, it's not just me. Someone else has done that, and that's okay, because you're just human. You haven't done anything horrendous, you know. And what you've done is take something that you weren't happy with and turn it into something amazing, turn it into OTI, turn it into your own alcohol-free journey, you know. So actually sharing your story like that is one of the most powerful things you can do. And I suppose it's a question of self-reflection. Sharing your story is helpful. Using your own story to constantly beat yourself up, what does that achieve?
Absolutely. Can't swear. F all.
Yep. Yeah.
I know this. And I've got to say, when I was 5 years alcohol free, and at the time I didn't know if to laugh, cry or what, Ben surprised me with my daughter on the podcast. Remember, Ben? He said, oh, I've got the guest sorted for you, 5 years. I've got the guest sorted. And my daughter joined us on the podcast. And to this day, even now, parents, particularly mums, but all parents, but mostly mums, do get in touch. And only somebody last week, I heard that episode, and it was so, so powerful. And I know my kids are proud, like ridiculously proud. And yeah, I just need to stop bleating. But I do think, as awkward as it is and as exposing as it is, I think it is really important to share and to talk about this, because it's unpleasant feelings for a lot of people, you know. So yeah.
When you lead the way, you know, again, repeating Brené Brown, but like, courage is contagious. I think that's so true.
Oh, I like that.
It's so true, isn't it? It is, and that's what you're doing by standing up there and going, I'm human, I got this wrong, because that enables everyone else to go, well, I'm human too, and I got it wrong too. You know, no one's expecting perfection, but being able to kind of stand there and go, you know, it's all right. Like, what, we live in a world where we don't normalize normal. You know, we expect perfection. You know, we live in a world of social media where you literally are drip fed, force fed, impossible perfection. You know, which might be a nice segue into the youth of today, because they're just, you know, we shame is often induced by this inability to live up to this idealized self. You know, and we're given an impossible idealized self to live up to. The reality is we are human, and whether it's through alcohol or parenting practices or whatever it is, we're going to get things wrong as parents. You know, what matters is owning it.
You really made me smile for a number of reasons. I love the way you described it about me sharing how I'm feeling and blah, 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 and courage is contagious. Ben, at the start of this podcast, just went, Sharon Hartley, she's got a big gob. Yeah. I'm going to go with Sarah's way of describing it. It really made me laugh.
You know what, though, Sarah? Yeah. It is such a big area, isn't it? Because you just said something then. Like, I totally thought of shame as, why did I? But what you've just described there is shame as, why can't I? And that's like a whole different kind of... Thanks, miss. That's a whole different... Do you know what I mean? Like that whole kind of comparison shame.
Yeah, it's about the self. And that's the biggest problem about it. And we're not talking about it. Like, I think if you look at... Schools do amazing things, okay, particularly teachers. I'm an ex-teacher. They work their butts off. And there's lots of really brilliant things that go on in all areas, actually, of raising our young people around trying to make them more resilient and trying to bolster their mental health and so on. But what Unashamed, which is the movement I'm sort of trying to drive and the work I'm trying to do, is failing to address is the very thing that's too painful to talk about, which is that self-worth, which is that kind of like belief in themselves, you know, which shame is the biggest vampire of self-worth, you know. So it's that, like you say, it's that I'm not that person, I can't be that good, I am not worthy, you know. It is absolutely all those things, unlike the guilt part, the behavior part, like I did that, I don't like it, you know, which again, like I say, is more empowering because you can change it. So yeah, we're living in a world where we are constantly made to feel like we're not good enough, our showing our self-worth is eroded, we feel huge shame, and then we don't talk about it, you know. And actually what we need to be able to do is go, well, I am normal, this is me, and it's okay, and I shouldn't have to be this thing, you know, and so on. So yeah,
big topic,
and it's too big.
It feels like this is a good time to get a plug in for your stuff, Sarah.
Let's do it, come on Sarah.
Okay, so I am on Instagram as Unashamed Coach. And what I do is two halves of it, really. One is just a general kind of training, support, coaching, personal development set of programs around helping people to understand shame, understand how it shows up for them. And then most importantly, work through how to manage it, how to become more competent in shame, more resilient to shame, because we can't take shame away. So I've got a series of programs. Some are specific to becoming alcohol free, because when you become alcohol free, and once you've got through the really rocky, however long it is for you, period of just trying to stay sober, you're then sort of looking down into this vast open space of who you really are. And, you know, you kind of then start to peel back some of the layers. So I'll be running in, starting in May, a course for anyone who's interested in looking at their shame around alcohol and what they can do to build their own emotional and personal resources around that. So that's a 7-week program, which you can find out all about on Unashamed Coach on Instagram. And then the other part that I'm doing is more sort of charity based. So it comes from the specific focus of my master's research, which was around shame in education. And what that did, to try and keep it brief, is look at all the amazing things that are going on in school and note there's a stark absence of any discussion around shame. And yet there's a lot of research which shows kids come into school full of shame. It's socially distributed in the sense that minority groups, disadvantaged groups, are disproportionately more likely to be experiencing shame. And then school systems inadvertently are full of shame. So, you know, you come in as this vulnerable child with your own big rucksack of shame that you can't really take off. And then assessment procedures and teaching practices and so on add to that shame. So I take all that knowledge into schools and into colleges and help leaders, well-being staff, teachers and parents to go, this is what shame is, this is how it's showing up for your child, and this is what we can do to help develop resilience to shame. So that's what I'm doing. That's my mission. I've had some amazing support from some academics and even some celebrities. So we're looking at trying to sort of get that message out there. Certainly because, again, going back to what we were saying about your very brave big gob, Shaz.
just big. Just big,
no, it's brave. It's brave. is that actually when people in influential positions normalize normal things and show their vulnerability and show how they failed and show how they get things wrong, it is contagious, you know. And what part of the Unashamed movement is all about, is about making that more normal, you know, more normal in schools. Celebrities going, look, I am not this image of perfection that either I portray or people portray me as. You know, here's an example of me getting it wrong, like sharing their own shame, if you see what I mean. So that what we can do is bring those conversations out, and we can help people to talk about them instead of that kind, instead of fueling the silence and letting shame fester, which from a mental health point of view is catastrophic. So, yeah, so that's what I'm doing in terms of Unashamed. Yeah.
I love it, Sarah. I think it's so good. And I also love that, you know, you're not coming on here and going, and if you pay me £999.99, then I will remove all your shame. You know, you're saying that, you know, that you can't. I think that's really interesting. It's about tools and, you know, it's about you want to reframe shame. You know, you can't remove it, but it's just about dealing with it and looking at it in a new way. That's really cool and really real.
Thank
and probably
you.
Not as expensive as only £999.
Well, you can pay me £999 and I'll do my best, but no, it isn't. It's certainly not that much. And it's no, absolutely not. I think it's about helping people to develop like social and emotional skills, whether that's us as alcohol-free adults or, you know, arguably, I say more importantly, it's not about that, but trying to give our young people the tools that are really going to make a difference to them. Like they're in a world that I almost don't recognize. You know, I didn't grow up in a world of social media, despite, you know, we all had a healthy bunch of shame. It was different, but it is very different these days. And we are facing this incredible crisis in mental health of our young people, like as emerged, you know, we talked about adolescence, we referenced that earlier. Which is, yeah, I've seen it. It's incredible. You know, I want to do is help as many other people doing it, but open up that discussion around, you know, what's going wrong and what should we be giving our kids to help them cope with this in this world? And it isn't just trigonometry and the key themes of King Lear or osmosis or whatever the hell it is you learn at school. Those things are important. It's about that. So that's my real passion, really, is trying to make a difference in that way.
Sarah, thank you.
That's been all right.
A cracking chat. While you've been talking, there's been something niggling me and I'm thinking, what's that quote? And I've finally found it to do with shame. And so I think this just, it's just so appropriate to everything we've been talking about for the last hour or so. Shame dies when stories are told in safe places.
I finally found it.
Yes. Anne Voskamp.
That's right.
Is the woman behind that. Shame dies when stories are told in safe places. And I can't get enough of that quote.
No.
I think it's absolutely fantastic. Sarah, as always, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for listening to me in bed on this episode as well. It has felt like a proper, this is how I'm feeling. Sarah, are we doing it all right? So we appreciate your advice. We appreciate you. Just very quickly, remind people if they want to make contact with yourself, where they can do that, Sarah.
Thank you. That's really kind of you. So on Instagram, just Unashamed Coach is my Instagram, and I'm going to start building that up. My website, which is still being developed, but there'll be a mailing list coming on there, is unashamed.world. And the other thing I just wanted to give a quick shout out is that myself and the lovely Andy Delderfield, who's quite a big character in your OTI world, are running and have run for some time now a coach mastery hub. So any coaches that are interested in developing their personal development as well as coach mastery, please come and check us out. But what the most important thing about that is that we're about to develop and release a specialist space for alcohol-free coaches. So we're going to look at like a center, like an online group of people that work specifically with people that are going alcohol free and look at sort of developing some really good practice to share and so on. So I just wanted to get that out there in case anyone is coaching alcohol free people as well.
That was a really refreshing end to the sentence Andy Delderfield is running, because usually it's like Andy Delderfield is running through ice glaciers whilst carrying 85 kilograms of ice, you know.
He's a rhino. He is an actual rhino in the London Marathon.
Of course he is.
Yeah. Our very own Susan's involved as well, isn't she? One of our coaches, Susan
McGarry.
OTI.
Lovely.
Amazing Susan.
She is absolutely delightful. And yes, she's in with us and really helping us to develop the hub. It's a lovely, safe space. Lovely. So, and she's a fab coach as well. So, yeah, great to have her on board.
Sarah Chamberlain, as always, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on Over the Influence.
Thank you a million times over. And here's to us all being unashamed.